You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It's a Friday edition. Friday's the best day of the week because it's the day Ari and I talk about games that are coming up on Saturday, which means we get to watch football all day tomorrow. It's going to be beautiful. It's going to be glorious. There's some great games. There's some very interesting lines, very interesting over-unders. And Ari, I am very ready for this week. We spent a lot of Thursday talking about potential compromise with the college football playoff. It seems like the commissioners who got really mad at Greg Sankey are now ready to get out of their own way and maybe get something done in time for 2024. It sounds like the only tweak that they want to make to the original plan is instead of it being the six highest ranked conference champs, it's the Power Five conference champs and the highest ranked group of five champ, which would change the outcome like one out of every 10 years. I can live with that, Ari, if they just get this thing going.
Yeah, I understand that. I think that bringing back the idea of winning a conference championship is kind of cool. Am I alone in that?
I don't think you're alone in that. I think there's a lot of people who like that. But the thing is, it's the same idea. It's just this changes the situation where now it does delineate the Power Five from everybody else instead of saying just the top six ranked conference champs, which I think there's only one year that would have been the case where a Power Five school would have been left out. So I don't think it's going to change the field in a lot of cases, but I do think it'll grease the wheels and get this thing going. The league that I would think it works out the best for is the new Big 12, the Texas and Oklahoma-less Big 12.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, the concept of Power Five is ever adjusting, right? Like, I mean, it's changing every, I don't know, maybe the fireworks for the most part are over here, but like the new Big 12 without Texas and Oklahoma having an automatic bid is a pretty, well, the idea of that is a pretty nice deal for them because I think you could make the case that they're I don't think you make the case. I think they're clearly the worst Power Five as we know it conference, but now, you know,
I think they're pretty close with the Pac-12, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But at least the Pac-12 has name brand powers that have, you know, competed for, have made the playoff in the past. It's like, as you know, I guess Baylor and TCU kind of, you know, were in that discussion in 2014 and they've had other teams, but you get my drift. There's no traditional power now in that conference. And, you know, guaranteeing that conference is going to have a playoff team. And let's be honest, the winner of that conference in a 12-team format would probably find their way in regardless. But like,
yes,
I think agree. The idea is nice because the one thing that we've heard a lot this week, Andy, is what? Why do they play the games? You know, you hear that over and over and over again. And I think bringing back the emphasis on winning a conference championship is great for the sport, not just because, you know, winning a conference is a great accomplishment that kind of gets lost in the dust in some of these places, but also, you know, helps you settle it on the field. And instead of worrying about subjective playoff rankings where people are screaming at the sky about Michigan and Michigan State's ranking, you know, both teams are on the same side of a conference that would be able to settle it on the field, which they've semi-done already. And, you know, anything that preserves, you know, conference races and regular season fun, I think is a good thing.
Well, and the other thing is we talked about devaluing conference championship games with the 12-team league. This adds more value back in. Now, so did the other plan, but this tells you exactly which games are going to determine if a team makes the playoff by winning the game, which does add an element of intrigue, especially if you've got a fluky division champ. And I realize this is something a lot of people don't want. They don't want that fluky division champ to have a chance to make the playoff, but Look, if you have a freaky bid thief, I mean, we love bid thieves in March. Why can't we have bid thieves in December?
Also, if the field is 12, there's going to be bid thieves anyway, whether you want to call it or not. There's not 12 teams in college football who are good enough to win a national championship. And you're going to have 12 teams playing on that stage. So if one of them is, if you win your Power 5 conference, as far as I'm concerned, I don't care how you got there. Go, run with it, King. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think that's good.
Yeah. Here's the other kind of reading the tea leaves on this. I would think that for the Big 12's next media rights deal, the first one without Texas and Oklahoma, there's a difference financially to a TV network between one of these teams might make the playoff and one of these teams is guaranteed to make the play.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 100% right on that. And I wonder too about the influx of cash and, you know, maybe the ability to get more might help some of these programs that are in the developmental stage take the next step. Like I sometimes wonder too, it's like if you are in a conference that doesn't have to compete with Oklahoma and Texas for all the bad reasons of losing them to the SEC, are there inherently good reasons for teams like Baylor or TCU or Iowa State?
Now you don't make a case there. You're not blocked by Oklahoma. Yeah. You're not blocked by Oklahoma anymore. And the other piece, I mean, like if you're UCF, Cincinnati, Houston, BYU, this is gold for you. But here's the other thing. Does this maybe change the tenor of the negotiations whenever those start for Texas and OU's exit from the Big 12? Because they've said they're willing to wait till 2025. I think we all know that nobody wants that to take that long. And so perhaps the Big 12 is a little more amenable to letting them go if Greg Sankey, who's not necessarily a fan of this compromise, were to say, you know what, we're cool with that. That's fine.
Yeah, I mean, Sankey wants as many SEC teams in there as possible. So,
right.
But I think that is also rational because when you think about it, how many traditional powers who are going to be good every year or at least a discussion point every year are in the SEC? Six?
Yeah.
Is that a fair number?
The thing is, it is, but here's the thing. The 5+1 or the 6 highest ranked conference champs doesn't change how many SEC teams would get in.
That's right.
So it really is no skin off his nose, but I think because he was one of the architects of the original proposal, those guys like the idea of not letting in like a fluky 3 or 4 loss team that happened to win its conference championship.
But when's the last time that's happened?
It's not. It's just, yeah, I'm trying to remember the last, was it Wisconsin in 2012 because Ohio State and Penn State couldn't play in the Big Ten championship game. So Wisconsin ended up playing Nebraska.
How many losses did Wisconsin have in that scenario though? I don't even remember that. Were they one of those?
Three or four. I believe they had 4.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, I guess in a world where two teams or one team that is undefeated gets, banned from postseason play because of NCAA violations, and I guess we'll just have to.
Ari, they
that.
Had 5 losses.
They did? Interesting.
Yeah, they were 7. They were 7-5 going into that game.
Well, if there's a 7-5 team that wins their conference, then hey, you know, I don't know. I really like the idea. You know, my perfect world, and I don't know if you're with me on this. I think 12 is 4 too many, and I know that if you want to expand the playoff, you just expand it big enough where you feel like you're done. But to me, you have 8, which is more exclusive, which continues the intrigue. Mm-hmm. It's enough spots to guarantee all Power 5 conference champs will get at least one bid from winning the conference. You have 2 at-larges for other Power 5 teams that are also really good. So like in this year's example, you'd have an Alabama and a Georgia spot, both of which may be deserving at the end of this whole thing. And then you save one for the group of 5. Everybody's represented. Yeah. Everybody has a chance.
The SEC and Notre Dame will not do anything that has fewer at-larges than there are now. So it's out.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, like, to me, that would be, but like Notre Dame, I mean, it would be the same scenario, basically.
Except it's not. There's 4 at-larges now, and there are.
I know, but there's 4 at-larges now, but they're automatically reserved for the SEC champion anyway. You don't have to say that it is, but it is. I mean, 2 of those spots are going to the Big Ten champ and the SEC.
What if the SEC has 4 of the best 8 teams? What I'm
saying for the Notre Dame thing is that in the current model as it currently exists, Notre Dame has resigned itself to having to go undefeated to get in. In this current system right now, if there's an 8-team playoff and Notre Dame is undefeated in the regular season, there is no circumstance where they wouldn't get one of those two. It's the same exact thing as it is now.
If you're Notre Dame and you can do a 12-team playoff and you're now you're guaranteed to get in if you're 11-1, and sometimes if you're 10-2,
yeah, why wouldn't you do that instead? I'm just saying my perfect world would be to, I think that 12 waters it down a little bit too much for my personal preference. Because I think when you add 12 in, we might get some fun matchups, but you're letting in four teams that shouldn't be in there.
You're going to be the first person that first week when there's the games on campus between the number 5 seed through the number 12 seed. You're going to be like, woo-hoo! I'm telling you.
I'm not saying I'm not going to enjoy the games. I mean, it's nobody's that's against this or has a secondary opinion about what it should look like is anti-fun matchups. I mean, we love the sport to watch it. Like, if we get to see a cool matchup between Oregon and Texas A&M and then 12-team playoff, and we never would have seen that matchup before, of course I'm going to watch it. Of course I'm going to enjoy it. But my understanding of this is that we're trying to make it as inclusive as possible for everybody, but there's a way to make it inclusive without watering it down. And I think there aren't 12 teams in the country that are good enough. I mean, like,
but there's not a realistic way to do that because the SEC and Notre Dame won't vote for it. So no,
like in my perfect world, that would be what it would look like.
We need to do an entire offseason episode on Ari's perfect world. I just want to know what your perfect world looks like. Like, post-game not just pizza. The football piece of it. I want to know what your perfect, like, driving down the street, like what chain restaurants you see in your perfect world. I want to know what your perfect gas station has on the roller grill. These are all things that I'm dying to know.
I've got answers. Yeah, I didn't fire them off, but yeah.
Well, we got a lot to talk about now. We're gonna save that. One of our first off-season shows is going to be Ari's perfect world. I cannot wait for that show.
You can't lose a bet by the hook or you're reimbursed.
Okay.
Every single drive-thru in America has a Filet-O-Fish as an option. There's an 8-team playoff where every conference champ in the Power 5 gets in. You can eat whatever you want without weight gain. And
I like that one.
Yeah. I'll make a list. It'll be good.
I cannot wait. I want to live in this world other than
would you rather be a billionaire? You'd be given $1 billion in cash right now.
Yes.
Or maybe a billion is too much. Let's say $1 million dollars in cash. Cause a billion is at that point, nothing matters. Or would you rather be given the gift to be able to eat whatever you want and how much of whatever you want for the rest of your life without ever having negative health ramifications from it?
Keep your money. I'm eating everything.
What if I said a billion?
I'd take the billion.
See, a billion's a little bit too much because a billion, you could get a personal trainer, you know, and even if you get fat when you're a billionaire, nothing matters anyway. So who cares?
$1 million is a lot of money. I've never seen $1 million before in my life, but I know, like, you know, what you think about what your house is worth. You think about, you know, if you've ever looked at what you wind up paying on your mortgage after 30 years and what you wind up paying on your car payment after all the years when the interest is included. So, like, you're going to spend there's a reasonable chance you're going to spend $1 million in your life or make $1 million in your life. And that's that. But being able to eat everything you want without negative health ramifications, including not getting fat, I'm in.
Yeah.
Keep your $1 million. I'll find a way to make some money.
Well, inflation was just 6.2% or something crazy like that. The first time, the highest in 31 years. So like $1 million, as we were trying to find a house and all the things with the baby, $1 million when I was a kid, I thought was if you had $1 million, you could just ride off into the sunset. Tell the world
you are super wealthy, buy your own island.
That is not the world we live in anymore. So I'm just trying to think, like, what about 10 million?
10 million, I might take the 10 million. because time value of money, you know, if I'm smart enough to just set most of that aside and just let it accrue, me and several generations of my family are good to go. So I can work out, I can have a personal trainer, I can count calories in that case. But if it's 1 million, I'm eating everything in sight.
Okay. Sorry for hijacking your podcast, but you want to talk about perfect world? I always joke about what a gift it would be if you could just wake up. You wouldn't need Magic Spoon.
We always need Magic Spoon, Ari. Everyone needs magic spoon.
Well, now you do. Yeah, because it's the perfect
140 calories per serving. Keto friendly.
There's no such GMO thing as keto free. In this world at that point. You can eat a bowl of Rice Krispies.
We want everyone to love Magic Spoon and buy a Magic Spoon.
No, but I'm saying this is the perfect thing. We need Magic Spoon because what the scenario I'm giving you doesn't exist.
It's true, true, true. Maybe that's their new motto. Until Ari's perfect world exists, buy Magic Spoon.
That's right.
I like it. All right, let's talk some games because there's a lot going on. I pressed the wrong button because I always do. The game we want to talk about, we were talking about the Big 12 earlier. Let's talk about the Big 12 now. Oklahoma is back in action after a week away. They are a 5.5-point favorite at a Baylor team that lost to TCU last week, but weird circumstances in that TCU loss because TCU had just fired Gary Patterson. They decide that Max Duggan is too hurt to play. Chandler Morris finally makes his start, and Chandler Morris looks fantastic. He looks like the kind of quarterback that, Oklahoma would have recruited. Oh, wait, they did.
Is Baylor the best team that Oklahoma will have played up to this point?
Yes. Yes, and it gets progressively more difficult. Now, I know Baylor beat Iowa State, but I'd say Baylor and Iowa State are kind of in the same bucket. And then Oklahoma State might be kind of a notch above those two.
Give me the points.
Even though Iowa State beat Oklahoma State.
Give me the points.
You want the points? Okay.
Oh, I want the points. I think that Oklahoma's been trying to tell us who they are all year, and it's time to listen.
Okay.
Am I nuts?
You're not nuts. You're not nuts. So this is the first open date since Caleb Williams became the starter. And I always feel like when you make a major change like that, you kind of need some time to recalibrate everything. And so once you have a chance to, you kind of become what you are. And so I don't know that we've seen what Oklahoma is fully yet. I think we're going to see it this week. So you have decided Oklahoma has revealed itself. That's who the Sooners are. And they're going to kind of go by the skin of their teeth the whole way through. I'm not so sure. I think Oklahoma still has a step up in it. And I think we're going to find out this week which one of us is right.
Yeah, and Oklahoma, if they do what you're saying, is going to create an awesome potential discussion at the end of the year for the playoff. Because I think Oklahoma finishing the season undefeated as a Big 12 champion is an automatic bid into the playoff. It takes up one of the spots, and then you have 2 through 9 to go with and to try to decipher who. And I understand there's a lot of games left to be played, and things are going to happen. But Oklahoma making it and taking away one of the spots is going to make for quite the controversy, I think, in one way or the other. So so what do you think? That like going on a bye week is like a training camp week?
I think so. I think you go back to fundamentals, all that good stuff. But I also think that – I just feel like this team can be better than what we've seen. I don't think it is what it is. I think they can get better as the season goes on. They got better as the season went on last year. I think it's possible. So
it's game 10.
As far as Oklahoma, I'm doing a bad job here trying to produce this thing. I'm trying to put in an ad and I can't put in an ad. Before we go, this is a first. We're doing the video podcast as well, and I'm trying to run the ads at the same time. Very tricky process. But so with Oklahoma, here's the thing. I don't know that it's that interesting a discussion as long as Oklahoma keeps winning in terms of the playoff, because they are going to play the three best opponents on their schedule here in these next few weeks. They will then play one of those opponents again. And if they beat them all, then I don't think there's a problem. I think they're going to be in.
No, the problem isn't Oklahoma getting in. Oklahoma could win ugly like the Kansas game, each of the remaining games, and win by one in all those games. I think they're in. I don't think we're in a world where we can leave out a Power 5, undefeated Power 5 conference champion, whether that be Wake Forest or whether that be Oklahoma. That said, I think the controversy will be with the remaining teams and which teams potentially will get into that final spot. Because especially like if Georgia loses to Alabama in the SEC championship game, which I'm assuming is probably going to be a pick 'em or a 3-point spread, certainly within the realm of possibility, Those two will probably go, or most likely will go. Oklahoma will take the third spot up as an undefeated Power 5 champ, and then there's a lot of discussion there for that last spot, which is what I think could happen.
It's probably the Big Ten champ, whoever gets through that gauntlet, would be my guess, if somebody gets through with one loss, which that leaves out Cincinnati, that leaves out Oregon. Now, if you look at everybody's remaining schedule, I think there's a good chance, if Cincinnati plays the way they've been playing, then they might lose. They might lose to SMU. They might lose to Houston in the American Championship game. There's a good chance they might lose. They cannot play the way they played against Tulsa, the way they played against Navy, and beat those two teams. So they have to play better if they want to stay undefeated. Then you've got Oregon, which has been basically living dangerously. Them against Washington State this week is no layup. In fact, I think maybe we just talk about that now. Let's talk about Oregon and Washington State. Oregon goes to Washington. They're much better than Washington. It's terrible weather, but that was a game for quite a while, Ari. Like, at what point does Oregon start putting away teams that it should put away that aren't Colorado?
I don't know. Do we even believe that they're built for it?
I think they can.
I think that Utah game in 2 weeks is going to be quite the banger.
Yeah, and it's probably the first of two. So even if you get them with the first one, you're still probably seeing them again. So that's the part I worry about. But prepare to stay up late Saturday night recording the podcast, Ari, because this is Pac-12 after dark, Washington State at Oregon. We're going to have to watch this one because you saw Washington State destroy Arizona State.
And that's a really good win.
Yeah, they play a game like that against Oregon, we might not be talking about Oregon in the playoff discussion anymore.
So you're taking 14 then, I'm assuming?
I think I might be. Yeah, I can see Oregon winning and not covering in this situation. They got to prove it to me at some point, right?
Yeah, it is kind of funny to think that they went on the road and beat Ohio State, and then we're still wondering if they're going to prove it to you. And I guess that Stanford loss is kind of still dwelling. But the last 4 weeks, Cal, UCLA, Colorado, Washington. You know, yeah, they have almost lost after beating or losing to Stanford a few times. And it's like you want people to be humming in November. I know it's just the natural inclination of any sports fan who's discussing this sort of thing. It's like you don't want to have a limping team limp into the playoff, which is why I think Oklahoma has found itself in a pretty bad spot in the current playoff rankings. But, you know, when a team is playing the way they're playing, it almost feels like, you know, there's a certain confidence, like when you talk about other teams, like there's a confidence that Georgia is going to win the SEC because of the way that they're playing. And, you know, right now it feels like we're waiting for Oregon to lose again. It seems like it's going to happen. We're just waiting for it to happen again. And that's not the way you want to view your playoff team.
They need to eliminate that feeling of inevitability. And the only way you do that is just start torching people. So we'll see if they can pull that off. We'll be right back after these words.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The headline game, or one of the headline games in the Big Ten, there's a couple. One of the headline games in the Big Ten, Michigan, 1-point favorite heading to Penn State. Ari, this is one where, okay, we were going to take out last year because last year was so weird for everybody. But the home team has been very, very good in this series with Harbaugh and Franklin there.
Yeah, my natural inclination is that Michigan's a better football team this year. And here's the thing. I have a very hard time trusting Penn State unless they're playing Ohio State. So I feel like I'm the only one who likes Michigan in this game.
I don't think you're the only one. I think
everybody I talked to is all over Penn State.
Well, I'm thinking back to 17 and 19. Now, 19 was an interesting trip to Penn State for Michigan because that was the one where Penn State absolutely dominated the first half. And it felt like in the second half, Michigan finally kind of figured out, oh, this is how we should be using Josh Gattis's offense. And this is how we should be calling plays. And this is what we should be doing. And you thought, okay, if they'd played both halves like that, maybe Michigan wins this game. So I do feel like Michigan kind of knows what it is a lot better than it did back then. So maybe they go in and win this game. But you look at Penn State, you know, that the Wisconsin win is looking better and better. The Auburn win looks pretty good. The Iowa loss looks worse. But I don't know. I think Penn State has enough to win this game. I think I'd probably take Penn State even to win outright. I mean, it's only 1 point, but
as opposed to the other way.
Yeah. Well, I mean, just you take the money line and win that extra $3.
Can I, I'm sure you've probably already talked about this, but like, what is your take on the rankings with Michigan and Michigan State?
I was never one to believe the conspiracy theories that they were doing it because it was a TV show. But now I kind of do because it makes no sense for them to keep Oregon ahead of Ohio State. They kept Baylor ahead of BYU. You know, they honored other ones, but they didn't honor the Michigan-Michigan State one, even though it had just happened. And there's no good reason for that other than they decided it would be boring. And it would make for a boring TV show if they didn't do something to get us talking. So they did something to get us talking. And I'm sorry if that's not what the committee did, but that sure looks like what they did.
Yeah, I just don't know if I buy the idea that if you honor the head-to-head or quote-unquote honor the head-to-head in one matchup that you have to do it in the other because
But the same reason they put Michigan ahead of Penn State would be the reason to put Ohio State ahead of Oregon. And they didn't do that.
What's Ohio State's reason to be ahead of Oregon right now? They've got no quality wins.
We think they're better. Same reason Michigan's ahead of Michigan State. They think if they played again, would win the game.
I think people forget that the protocol, like the head-to-head is the thing that we all watched and think, but like with the protocols, they have all sorts of different things that they're discussing, and it might not have just come down to that, you know? And if they think that they're better, then I think that Michigan is better than Michigan State. That wasn't a very popular comment on Twitter the other night, but I'm not necessarily sure I could sit here and look you in the eye and say, I'm sure that Ohio State's better than Oregon. They lost to Oregon and they play like crap the last few weeks. So like, I'm perfectly fine with this. I know that it's egregious because it happened so recently and people are freaking out about it, but like, I can understand that if you're in the room ranking teams and you're doing it in the pod system, you're not directly comparing each team with the team directly behind it, how you could end up with these rankings without it being consistent. Right? I mean, I don't know. I don't think it's crazy.
I am fine with it because at least within the Big Ten East, it'll all work itself out.
Because it doesn't matter anyway. Yeah.
Right. Michigan's playing Penn State. Michigan State still has to play Penn State and Ohio State. Ohio State still has to play Michigan. It will all work itself out. So
yeah.
Exactly. So it'll all work itself out, and we don't need to worry about it. But you know, if it were another situation where it's not going to work itself out, then I'd be a little more concerned. But Ari, before we head to another huge Big Ten game, which by the way, the last time these two teams faced off, it was a game we were all talking about afterward. So we go from State College to Columbus, Ari. Purdue is a 20.5-point underdog headed to Ohio State. Now, Purdue has played giant killer this year. They beat Iowa when Iowa was ranked number 2. They beat Michigan State when Michigan State was ranked number 3. They now face an Ohio State team ranked number 4 in the college football playoff rankings. Do you think the Boilermakers can do it again? And remember, Jeff Brohm has knocked Ohio State out of the playoff before.
So when I was doing the Ohio State podcast with Bill Landis, 4-6 with A&B, it kind of hit me something. Between George Karlaftis and Dave Bell, when is the last time that you could make the case for another Big Ten team that Ohio State is facing in the regular season or in the Big Ten championship that the other team had the two best players in the field?
That's a good question. I mean, Rondale Moore was very good in that 2018 game, but the Buckeyes were loaded there. I mean, it wasn't a situation.
And I know that like people are probably screaming.
Anybody else from Purdue?
Like, who would you take? Would you rather take, if you were creating a team and you had to pick two players to build your team around, would you take Garrett Wilson and Chris Olave, or would you take Bell and Karlaftis?
Well, I might take Garrett Wilson and Karlaftis or Olave and Karlaftis, but
yeah, yeah. Bell's, but I'm just saying, like, dominant. The combination of two.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I'm not saying that David Bell's better than any of the Ohio State receivers, but like the fact that this is even a conversation is such a foreign concept for Ohio State because this has never happened.
Yes, you're exactly right. And it's a scary thought if you're Ohio State too, because they have shown us this is similar to what we were talking about with Oklahoma. You said, you know, Oklahoma's shown us who they are. Do you think Ohio State has shown us who they are?
Yeah. And Ohio State's already lost because of it. So, you know, I think that we are, as college football analysts, constantly waiting. And the same thing that you said about Oklahoma right at the beginning of this podcast, I'm not necessarily sure that they haven't hit their second gear yet. And why do you think that, Andy? Because you know how they're built and you know the history of what that program is. You have faith in Lincoln Riley. Their offense is usually awesome. And they've made the playoff four times in the last, you know, 5 or 6 years, whatever it's been. So that's kind of the way that you view it. You probably, Ohio State's going to get the same benefit of the doubt in your mind. For me, I think Oklahoma has shown who they are, and I'm trusting who they are. And Ohio State, who has lost as a result of not having things together and played close games with Nebraska and Penn State the week before, that, like, I think I'm taking the 20 here.
I think I am too. I mean, Ohio State could just click suddenly, but I guess it's the same conversation we have with Oklahoma. I think Oklahoma will click. Now, the difference is Oklahoma is only a 5.5-point favorite. Ohio State is nearly a 3-touchdown favorite, which is very different. You know, Ohio State can still win this game by 2 touchdowns and not cover, which you could be very comfortable winning that way and still not cover. So I would take the 20.5. I'm with you on this because I think Purdue is going to give them a game. And even if Ohio State survives, it's probably going to be closer than 3 touchdowns.
And you ever bet on the NBA?
No, that seems insane to me.
Well, back in the day when the Warriors were the Warriors, right? When they were playing their best ball and they were one of those teams that could score 9 points in a minute and break a game open completely, they didn't cover every single spread that they were in, but it also was miserable to bet against them. And like, if Ohio State beat Purdue 42-17, I don't think anybody on earth would be surprised by that. But on the same hand, like, betting against Ohio State and being wrong would just be miserable. So like, to me, I would never bet this game like with my actual money, because you never know when it's going to click or if it's going to click. But based on what Ohio State has shown us, I don't think that it's good analysis to just be like, you know what? They're probably just going to figure it out this week and beat the crap out of Purdue. That's what I'm going to expect. I want to see that happen first before I discuss them in that light. And I know that that seems kind of interesting considering the fact that I view them as an attractive playoff candidate. But at the same time, too, I'm still picking Oregon over Ohio State if I'm on the committee right now. So, like, to me, I think Ohio State is probably one of the few teams in the country that can actually beat Georgia this year if things come together the right way. But we don't just get to say they're coming together until they do.
Well, speaking of Georgia and 20.5-point favorites, Georgia is a 20.5-point favorite at Tennessee. And I got to say, Ari, after watching Tennessee's offense the last few weeks, this is a tough one for me to say Georgia's going to win this by 3 touchdowns. Like, I feel like if anybody can score on them, it might be this particular iteration of Tennessee.
I'm a Hendon Hooker fan. I'm a fan. I think Tennessee's
team. How could you not be?
I think the Tennessee team total is 17.5 for what they're expected to potentially score in this game. If they go over 17.5, I think I'm taking the points here. Like, to me, like, I think if the expectation is that Tennessee's going to score 17, I don't know that Georgia's going to score 40. Maybe they will. But I think I like Tennessee here.
I think so too. Now, the bigger question is, and you just asked it, you know, can Tennessee get over 17 and a half? Can anybody score like that against Georgia's first team defense? Now, I'm not talking garbage time, you know, and it may be that there are some garbage time touchdowns in this game, but can anybody score three touchdowns on Georgia's first team defense? Is there anyone in the country capable of doing that?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Who?
I think 21 Ohio State could score three touchdowns on them. I think Bama on the right day.
You think Alabama
maybe we'll probably be able to do it. I think maybe Cincinnati. Maybe. I think that list is pretty small though. And also, when you say could, and I think there's a distinction between could and
will. We're saying is it possible, not is it likely. There's a difference.
I think that it's certainly possible if Ohio State's offense is very, very good when they're got it figured out. I think that the one matchup that I would want to see over any other matchup when it comes to the Titans or the top six teams right now, I'd want to see Ohio State's offense against Georgia's defense. I think that would be the most entertaining possible matchup between two teams this year. And I think there's a good chance that we're probably going to get to see that. And but like I also, too, am very curious about Georgia in Atlanta against Alabama. You know, I don't know that. I know you and I have been on the Georgia train since before it was cool to like Georgia. Before the year, we both picked them to win the national championship, and I still obviously feel that way. And I don't know that there's been a team that's been this drastic of a favorite at this point in the year, the way that Georgia is this year, but I still would like to see what the walk-on quarterback does in Atlanta. Like, I still have some question about them. Like, they're not bulletproof. And Alabama's been there before. They're a thorn in everyone's side in the SEC, and I don't know if I'm just going to hand Georgia the SEC championship right now when Alabama still exists.
I think everybody who has a potential to make the playoff is going to be watching this Georgia-Tennessee game going, come on, Tennessee, just score on them. Just give us hope.
Yeah.
Here's the other piece of it. You might feel differently about Georgia's offense after, because Georgia's not had to try to score a ton of points to win. This is one of the most efficient offenses in the country. If they get dragged in anything close to a shootout, my guess is they're going to score a ton of points.
Yeah. If Georgia's offense is built to survive a shootout, then I think that they're winning a national championship is a foregone conclusion. But I also think there's a difference between a shootout against Tennessee and a shootout against Bama. So
absolutely.
You know,
but you don't want to see either one if you're somebody who might have to play them, because you're afraid if Georgia can win a shootout, that's a problem. It does make you feel better because it meant somebody scored on them, but I don't know. I just think with their offense, it's been pretty risk averse because the defense allows it to be risk averse. But I think if they needed to, they could make some stuff happen.
Andy, if Georgia beat Tennessee 52-39 this week, don't you think that your viewpoint of Georgia's dominance in the sport this year would be completely different?
Yeah, it would make me feel like somebody else has a chance.
Me too. Like, I think if Georgia beat Tennessee 10-6 or 10-0, that would be more of a confidence boost for me in terms of what I think Georgia is capable of on the biggest stage, more so than winning in a shootout. Because the one thing that we know, death, taxes, and Georgia's defense. If Georgia's defense gets exposed for any reason, not that I accept that that's even a possibility right now, but if it were to happen, I think it would have to result in me recalibrating my viewpoint on how untouchable they are in this season.
Let us head to Oxford, where Texas A&M is a 3-point favorite at Ole Miss. I think this might be the most entertaining game of the weekend, Ari. Texas A&M is an interesting one because they proved against Alabama they can win a shootout. They proved against Auburn they can win a completely defensive struggle. I think they're about to get dragged into another shootout. I think they can win that way, too.
I am not higher on, maybe not on the field, but have you been paying attention to what Texas A&M has been doing in the recruiting front?
I mean,
they got Walter Nolan
and Evan Stewart was there with him, and he might be next on board. Who knows?
They got Walter Nolan and another top five, a top 100 receiver on the same day on Saturday. And they also got crystal balls from five-star safety out of Louisiana, Jacoby Matthews, five-star wide receiver Evan Stewart out of Frisco up by where I live, and four-star defensive lineman Anthony Lucas, all of which are top 60 players. Like, I'm not trying to turn this into a recruiting conversation, Andy, but like Texas A&M is building an Alabama-Georgia-like roster right now. And like, I know that they have two losses and, you know, they've had to kind of make do with a backup quarterback this year, and it's unfortunate that this is also the year that they won't beat Alabama. But like, I don't think there's any program in America right now that's hotter than Texas A&M. Is that, can I make that claim?
No, you absolutely can. Absolutely. Now, on the field is different than yeah. in recruiting. And right now, but here's the thing on the field.
On the field, yeah.
It feels like they are rounding into form. It also feels like, you know, they're not out of it in the SEC race. Now, they need help. They would need Auburn to beat Alabama in the Iron Bowl. And obviously, Texas A&M has to win this week against Ole Miss. They still got to beat LSU. There's a lot left that they would have to accomplish to get to Atlanta, and then somebody would have to help them.
I mean, don't forget Prairie View.
But how could I? But that doesn't seem outside the realm of possibility, Ari, that all that stuff happens.
Yeah, I mean, if Auburn beats Alabama in the Iron Bowl this year in Harsin's first year, I just like, it's not supposed to happen that regularly. It's just not. Auburn's got something in the sauce up there, man. I don't know what it is, but they got something up in the sauce.
You've never been to a big SEC game, and I'm just telling you, Jordan Hare, when Auburn is good and the opponent is big, is a very tough place to play. And there are days, like the 2017 regular season game against Georgia, there are days Auburn ain't losing in that place. There are days like that. So we'll see what happens. But first, Texas A&M has to get out of Oxford with a win. I think Matt Corral is going to be able to do some stuff against that defense. They will not look as dominant as they did against Bo Nix and Auburn. But how healthy are Ole Miss's receivers? Is that offense at full power? Because I feel like it needs to be against the Texas A&M defense.
Yeah. Every week I have to submit my picks on The Athletic for the 15 or 10 biggest games of the week. And
yes, I was asked to do a welfare check on you over this game.
Yeah. I went 7-2 last week. I'm feeling pretty good about that, but I picked Ole Miss, and it's just because of just like the score projections that I was reading on the internet. And like, it just seems to me that Matt Corral might be able to do some things against this Texas A&M defense. But like, I don't feel good about that. I saw the welfare check thing. Like, this is like a really tough game to peg.
It is. And I think that's why the spread is so narrow. And I don't know what's going to happen, but I do think it's going to be highly entertaining. So I can't wait for that.
No, bro, elsewhere in the SEC, nobody loves anything more than you love watching Ole Miss, I feel like.
I do enjoy it. I think they're just one of the more interesting teams in college football. They play interesting games, except for the one last week, which we told you was not going to be interesting, and it wasn't. They won. They were better. They were clearly better, and they just sort of, you know, sucked the air out of that one. But this one could be interesting. We moved out of the Plains. We mentioned Auburn when they're good and Jordan Hare's rocking. It's real hard to win there. I think Mississippi State probably finds that out, especially Auburn needing to play a little better offensively after just getting embarrassed by Texas A&M's defense. But I would do the reason we're talking about this, you know, the one I wanted to bring it up. These two teams once played a classic. We're not 13 years removed from this, Ari, but these teams once played a classic 3-2 game.
It's been that long.
It was 2008. And the only reason I bring it up and was reminded of it this week, I did a story. There was a spate of midseason coordinator firings this week. You had it at Florida, Washington, Oregon State, and Nebraska. And so somebody had asked me, does these ever work? So I went back and looked at to find out which ones worked and which ones didn't. One of the ones that most decidedly didn't was when Tony Franklin got fired 7 games into the 2008 season at Auburn. But before he got fired, they played that 3-2 classic against Mississippi State. So I just figured, let's commemorate that. Hey, remember when they played that? It was one of the greatest games ever played. But more points will be scored in this one, I assure you. Mike Leach is involved. Although I think both defenses in this game are really good.
You know, there isn't really a seller in the SEC this year. I mean, outside of Vandy.
Vanderbilt. Maybe, there's not maybe, in the SEC West. Yeah. Everybody in the SEC West, it feels like on the right day, can beat everybody else. What I will point out, the under feels pretty good in this game. 49.5 is the total. And I realize that's 26-24. But I don't know. Both these defenses are pretty good. So I might hit the under in this thing.
Mm.
Oh, did you notice how I actually correctly did the math there?
I know. I was actually doing what I didn't want to jinx it. Any.
I ruined our best running bit by correctly calculating that. So
I actually looked up the team totals, like the Tennessee team total that I hit 17.5. I just knew it.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have to do any math. I just knew the number.
Impressive.
But I do appreciate everybody tweeting at us, teaching us how to do that.
It's like they don't know that if we learn how to do it, the show gets less funny.
Yeah, I think we're just going to continue just to try off the top of the head. And maybe one day we'll just get it right on accident. But I could see that. I could see this game staying under.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Let's move to the AC, well, ACC and ACC adjacent. Notre Dame not officially part of the ACC in football, but obviously they are in the other sports, and they have a scheduling deal that has them playing games like this game at Virginia, where they are a 5-point favorite. And Notre Dame is interesting in the college football playoff race. I have said, like, I went on a gambling show on VSiN a few weeks ago, and they asked, you know, what are the chances of Notre Dame making the playoff at 11-1? And I'm like, 0%. 0%. Now, I'm feeling a little bit bad about that because I think there now might be some scenarios where they could make it at 11-1, but it's a lot of chaos that would have to happen. More interesting to me is, can Notre Dame stay with one loss for Cincinnati's sake? And we don't know if Brennan Armstrong for Virginia is going to play in this game. I think if he's playing quarterback for Virginia, it's a very different situation. If he's not playing, I like Notre Dame to cover, to win fairly easily.
Nope.
No? You got give me the
points. Give me the points. This is the last Notre Dame.
Notre Dame's looked better.
Virginia's got the number 11 offense in America. And Brennan Armstrong is going to play.
You're sure he's going to play?
I don't know. I thought I read a report earlier today that said that Mendenhall said that he was expecting him to play.
I have not seen that. Maybe I'm behind the times as we record this thing on Thursday mid-afternoon, but I had not seen that. So
obviously the quarterback changes the dynamic a little bit. Virginia, it's in the Washington Post. Mendenhall, while declining to confirm the severity of the injury, indicated he was planning for the junior to be available against Notre Dame.
To be available or to start?
To be available. I don't know. I mean, if
Brennan Democracy Armstrong may die in the darkness, but the post is not making me feel any better about what to do with this line. So,
well, can I say on the podcast that if he plays, then I'm all in on Virginia? Also, Virginia's
I think you could say that
at will on just about everybody they've played this year. And Notre Dame's D, I got news for you. I think they ranked number 60 overall in total defensive yards per game. Or defensive efficiency. Notre Dame doesn't have a great defense. So actually the over-under here, what is it, 64.5? I mean, that to me seems like a pretty solid play too, because I think Virginia is going to score and score a lot.
Yeah, the over feels Yeah, the over feels good if Armstrong plays too, but I don't want to touch anything if Armstrong doesn't play.
Well, yeah, if their best player doesn't play, then it changes everything. But they are one of the best offenses in college football, catching 5.5, which is basically a touchdown on the road or at home against Notre Dame. Like, I don't know that Notre Dame is some bulletproof team that's going to go kick the crap out of them on the road. Give me the points. I want points in Baylor, and I want points in Virginia.
It's very interesting because Notre Dame keeps winning. That buoys Cincinnati, and Cincinnati's at number 5 right now. They're in striking distance. And if Notre Dame keeps winning, all it does is float Cincinnati more. So it's fascinating to watch this unfold. Let's stay in the ACC. NC State at Wake Forest. Now, Wake Forest has a loss to North Carolina. That was not an ACC game. Can Wake Forest stay undefeated in ACC play? They're a 2-point favorite in this game.
I love that they're undefeated in the ACC right now, by the way. I love it.
I know.
It's so funny.
It's awesome.
I don't know. What's your take?
It feels like Dave Clawson does pretty well against Dave Doran in these situations and in games like this later in the season. NC State, the Miami game messed me up on NC State because I thought they would found some consistency and they were going to be different this year than in previous years, but now I'm not so sure. So I think I probably got to go with Wake Forest because they're just going to keep scoring. Now they got to stop you, but I don't know. I just, they're at home. They've won the last two times these two teams have played in Winston-Salem. I think I like Wake Forest.
I think I do too. I'm just always afraid of the fall apart, you know, once like the air gets let out of the balloon. And not that I think that Clawson's team is susceptible to that, especially because of the loophole of not having an ACC loss so they control their own destiny in their own conference. But like, I just get nervous coming off of an emotional release the way that they had against North Carolina. And NC State's not a bad team by any stretch of the imagination either. So I think I like Wake Forest with you, but I don't know that I love it.
I don't either. I think North Carolina was a terrible matchup for Wake Forest because Wake Forest defense has not been able to stop them in years past, was not able to stop them now. But I think it's really hard to keep up with Wake Forest's offense. I don't think there are many offenses in the country that can. So we'll see if Devin Leary and the Wolfpack can. All right, we started in the Big 12. Let's finish in the Big 12. Another team that I feel like is still in striking distance of the playoff that I don't think a lot of people are talking about is Oklahoma State. They've lost one game. Their defense is fantastic. If they're going to finish with one loss, they would probably have to beat Oklahoma 2 times in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And so if they keep winning, I think there's a good chance they can make the playoff. But they've got TCU in a really interesting situation this week. TCU comes in, they're a 13.5-point dog. They fire Gary Patterson less than 2 weeks ago, but they switched to Chandler Morris at quarterback last week and beat Baylor. And now suddenly they look like a different offense. And I realize that Oklahoma State's defense has been outstanding this year, but could it be? Is it possible that TCU could pull the upset with a completely different look on offense?
It's the Big 12 and 13 seems like a lot. And Chandler Morris was recruited by and committed to Oklahoma. So like,
and played there.
Yeah. I'm just saying like, if they recruit you at that, in that class at Oklahoma, that means you're pretty damn good. I don't know if I would be caught dead laying 13 here. And like, I think that it's important to say, as we discuss like teams that control their own destiny, Oklahoma State controls its own destiny, right? Like if they went out, they beat Oklahoma State twice or Oklahoma twice in Bedlam 2.0 even, they're in, right?
They're in. I think they're in the playoff in that scenario. So because some other stuff may have to happen, but that other stuff can happen. Like it's all pretty plausible. Yeah, so
likely it's will really because up to of the how crazy here. The sport is.
Yeah. No, it's really up to the Cowboys here. And I'm excited to watch this game because I rewatched TCU Baylor the other day, and TCU is a lot of fun to watch with Chandler Morris playing quarterback. They were not much fun to watch before. It makes you wonder why they didn't go to him before. And you know, I don't think that's why Gary Patterson got fired. Now, obviously, Max Duggan did get hurt, and that was the reason they made the change. But listen, I want to see this game. I think Oklahoma State, the way they were playing on defense, makes them a very difficult opponent for a lot of people. And the question is, can they keep this up? Can they stay as dominant as they were? Because, I mean, they went into West Virginia. West Virginia drove down the field and kicked a field goal. And then Oklahoma State shut them down for the next, whatever, 55 minutes. Like, they never did anything the rest of the game. And Oklahoma State's defensive linemen were just living in their backfield. So that's probably what Chandler Morris has to look forward to on Saturday.
Yeah, and Oklahoma State's one loss is a forgivable loss.
Yeah,
it's losing Iowa by State. Three on it's, the road on Iowa State, like, you know.
Yeah, it's fine.
If they were to beat Oklahoma twice, win the Big 12, I think they'd be a very good resume, and their loss wouldn't be bad.
Yeah. No, I think this is going to be a fun game. This is the type of game that makes or breaks a team. And because Oklahoma State, you know, obviously we're going to point toward Bedlam. Worry about this one because you don't know. Now, I think what may happen is, you know, Baylor may have gotten caught with, we don't have any film on this guy. We don't know what the offense is going to look like with him running it. Now Oklahoma State has a game to watch, and it may help the defense plan, and they may just come out and shut him down. But given what I saw against a pretty good Baylor defense, I think there's a chance somebody can score on them. So we'll find out, and that's all you can hope for. There's 3 weeks left of this regular season, Ari. There will be monumental results every week from here on out. I'm here for it. This is going to be awesome. I will talk to you again very late Saturday night. In fact, it'll be Sunday morning where we are, because we got to make sure Oregon wins in Pac-12 after dark. This is a noon Eastern to 2 a.m. scenario this week.
Can't wait to see you then.
We will talk to you in the wee hours.